This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Daschle's out, Greg's in, Blago's toast. The Senate says, hello, Newman. And Republicans pick the man of steel. It's Wednesday when our chauffeur is the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. And as usual, there's a lot to cover. Illinois has a new governor. Former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle's tax and conflict of interest problems kill off his nomination as health care czar. Tax issues take down another top White House aide, Nancy Killefer. There's a deal to keep New Hampshire's Senate seat in Republican hands, at least for now. More on that later. And we'll also talk about the art of vetting. We begin first, as always, with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Well, this is one of my favorite questions of all time because I really like this one. Okay. Judd Gregg, of course, is the senator from New Hampshire. He's been nominated to be the next Commerce Secretary. He previously served as congressman from New Hampshire and governor of New Hampshire. So he has congressman, governor, senator, and cabinet position. Okay. Who was the last person who held all four of those positions?
He wasn't elected dog catcher, too?
No.
Okay. So if you think you know the last person who was a congressman, a governor, a senator, and a member of a cabinet, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And, Ken, yesterday we heard a president say, I'm wrong more often in one night than we did in 8 years.
Or more than you and I have done on this show.
Absolutely.
Kind of hard. It was a pretty startling day for an administration that had been going so well, at least if you look at numbers and approval ratings and things like that. But I don't know if it was a question of lack of vetting, and we can talk about that later, or it was perhaps hubris, as some people have pointed out. But the point is that there were problems with, of course, Tim Geithner, who has been confirmed as Secretary of the Treasury. There was problems with Tom Daschle, who's up for HHS Secretary and the health care czar. And even though Barack Obama knew of these problems, the administration knew about these problems, they still wanted Daschle to fight for the nomination. The New York Times reported that actually Daschle went to the White House over the weekend and said, look, it's too much of a distraction. I want out. Obama said, no, fight for this. And then it wasn't until yesterday where it was over for Daschle.
And do we know? Well, that makes it difficult to figure out whether he was pushed or whether he jumped.
Well, it sounds like he jumped. It sounds like part of it, of course, you also referenced to Nancy Killefer, who was the chief, performance officer of the White House, who
didn't even need congressional confirmation.
Right. And she gave up her nomination because of a $298 tax that she failed to pay household servant taxes, and she had a $950 lien on her house because of that. And so she withdrew. So I think that the feeling was if Nancy Killefer would withdraw her name, a woman, while Barack Obama stood by two men, Tim Geithner and Tom Daschle, it would look pretty bad.
Nevertheless, what the disconnect the president said on TV last night was not so much that they didn't know about these things. Apparently they did know about them. Nevertheless, he didn't think he didn't connect for a minute about how the American people would react to say, well, we're going to it's no big problem if Tim Geithner or Tom Daschle has a tax problem. But it is a big problem if you or I have a tax problem.
Exactly. And I think that's the complete disconnect that Obama had with the rest of the people, with the American people, which is exactly what Obama didn't have. There was a connection, as we saw on January 20th and during the campaign. So, of course, when we're talking about, well, I know Geithner may have a problem, but he's a perfect guy for Treasury. Well, I know Daschle may have a problem, but he's a perfect person for health care policy. That doesn't work, especially when Barack Obama said in his inauguration speech that there are not two different rules here, one for the powerful and one for everybody else.
Well, let's see if we can get some answers to the trivia question. Again, if you think you know the last person to serve as a member of the House of Representatives, a member of the United States Senate, a state governor, and also a member of a president's cabinet.
I love this question.
800, Ken says nobody's going to get this. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Troy, calling from Iowa City.
Teddy Roosevelt.
If you threw in police commissioner, that might be true, too.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, of course, was never a congressman or a member of the U.S. Senate. So it wouldn't be Teddy Roosevelt.
But good guess.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's see if we can go now to Orville. Orville with us from Ames, Iowa.
I didn't hear you said
member of the Senate also. I was thinking Bill Richardson.
Oh, yeah, he didn't qualify as a member of the Senate. Of course, he was U.N. ambassador.
And he was governor and congressman,
and
but not a member of the Senate.
And was going to be a cabinet member for a second time. Of course, he had to pull out for other reasons, too. Thanks very much for the call, Orville.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see.
So I guess Orville wasn't right.
Let's go to Pablo. Pablo with us from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Yes, Mr. Cohen. Bill Cohen from Maine.
Bill Cohen did serve in Congress. He was a senator, and he did serve as Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, but he was never governor of Maine, so not Bill Cohen.
Oh, okay.
Nice try. Let's go to, this is a toughie, Robert in Denver.
Would it be Franklin Roosevelt?
He was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Even Secretary of the Navy is not really a cabinet position, but...
He ran for the U.S. Senate, did not win, but he never served in the House, so it's not FDR.
No, not quite. Thanks very much. Let's see. This is Robin. Robin from Tallahassee.
Is it Milton Rockefeller?
Rockefeller, of course, a four-term governor of the state of New York and vice president of the United States.
But not a senator nor a member of Congress.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's see if we can go to... This is Edwin. Edwin in West Windsor, New Jersey.
I'm thinking Andrew Johnson, Vice President Abraham Lincoln.
He wasn't in the cabinet. He was governor. He was in... but anyway, there's something far more recent than Andrew Johnson, but I don't believe Andrew Johnson was in Congress.
Okay.
All right. Let's thank you for that, though. And let's see if we can go to Roxanne. Roxanne in Minneapolis.
Hi. I think it was Governor Tommy Thompson of Wisconsin.
Well, Tommy Thompson was a governor, and he did serve in the cabinet, but never in Congress. Didn't serve as a senator or a member of House.
Nice try. Let's see if we can go next to Paul. Paul with us from Storrs, Connecticut, home of the Huskies.
Okay. I think it's Abe Ribicoff.
Ding, 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 ding.
I didn't think anybody would get this.
In fact, we just got an email from Bill in Kansas City who got Gabe Ribicoff, too.
Good old Gabe. No, Abe Ribicoff is correct. He was a member of the House and governor in the 1950s. He was John F. Kennedy's health, education, and welfare secretary
Hugh?
In 61. Hugh, yes, exactly. Later to become HHS. And then he was a senator from 62 to 80. Abe Ribicoff is the answer. I didn't think anyone would get it.
Congratulations, Paul. You win this week's no prize, which is exactly nothing. We're going
to
fix that.
It.
We're going to fix that. Wow. We're going to fix that. We're going to get a no prize going.
I didn't think anyone was going to get
it. In the meantime, interesting choice by the Republican National Committee at the end of the week. They met and voted and elected a new Republican chairman. And the Republican chairman, former lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, who ran for the United States Senate in 2006. It is Michael Steele. And here's one of his ads from that campaign in 2006. Listen to this and think if there's a word you don't hear in this commercial.
Hey, me again, Michael Steele. Soon your TV will be jammed with negative ads from the Washington crowd. Grainy pictures and spooky music saying Steele hates puppies. And worse, for the record, I love puppies.
Great ad, but
I didn't hear the word Republican.
Or conservative, for
that
matter.
Well, it's not the kind of words you want to hear if you're running for the office in Maryland, which is overwhelmingly Democratic. But Michael Steele did make history last week. He's the first former lieutenant governor of Maryland to be elected Republican National Chairman. No, of course, he's also the first African-American elected. And it was a fascinating thing because on the sixth ballot, there were six ballots. Mike Duncan, who had been the RNC chair appointed by President Bush, was out after two ballots. He really didn't have the support that he hoped for. And of course, he was saddled with the unpopularity of President Bush. But the final two was Kayton Dawson, the Republican state chairman of South Carolina, who until recently belonged to an all-white country club, and Michael Steele. And that was a very interesting, and I actually thought Kayton Dawson was going to win this thing, but when the choice came out to an African-American and somebody who just recently joined and was a member of an all-white country club, I was wondering what kind of a message I was going to send if the Republicans picked Dawson.
Well, does this indicate a more moderate direction for the Republican Party?
It didn't sound like it from listening to Steele's post-election speech. He sounded like he was going to take it up. But he did say that he hopes the Republican Party will be more viable in places like the Northeast, which for the first time in history does not have a single Republican member of Congress, on the West Coast, which is also solidly blue. He hopes to make a difference. But, of course, it really often doesn't matter who's the chairman of the party. It matters what the policies are and who your presidential nominees are and what you do in Congress. So Michael Steele has a tough job ahead of him.
That's the RNC, the Democratic Congressional National Campaign Committee is, well, in the interest of bipartisanship, running ads against Republican members of Congress who voted against the president's stimulus package in the House of Representatives.
Yes, and at the same time, Barack Obama is saying we're going to take partisanship out of this. That's why I want Judd Gregg in my cabinet. I am reaching across party lines. I don't want to play politics with this. At the same time, the DCCC, which its job is to elect more Democrats, are running ads against Republicans.
And speaking of bipartisanship, can you imagine getting a unanimous vote in the Illinois State Senate?
Well, if anybody could do it, it's Rob Blagojevich, and that's what he did last Thursday. The vote was 59-0. You needed two-thirds. He only needed 40 votes. He got all 59, unanimous vote in the state Senate.
All but unanimous in the state assembly, too. The one person who voted for him, his sister-in-law.
Well, no, actually, that's not true. I saw that reference, but it wasn't a sister-in-law. But,
okay.
But it was 117-1 in the House to impeach, 59-0 in the Senate, and Pat Quinn, the lieutenant governor, is now the governor of Illinois, and I guess Blagojevich has a job as a talk show host, or at least a talk show appearer,
well,
he's everywhere.
He can never run for, never be installed in state office in the state of Illinois
exactly.
Ever again, according to that bill. Anyway, the unintentional comedic moment of the week, this, of course, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton being sworn in, thanking her family, her parents, and, of course, her husband.
I am so grateful to him for a lifetime of all kinds of experiences.
Hillary Clinton slaying him at the State Department, being sworn in by Vice President Joe Biden into her new job. When we come back, we're going to be talking on a couple of issues. And if you'd like to weigh in as well, we're going to be talking with Lanny Davis, who has in the past vetted people about, well, some of the problems involved in vetting and why it's an art and not a science. Later, we're going to be focusing on the state of New Hampshire, where a deal was apparently made. Judd Gregg going to the become Secretary of Commerce, if he should be confirmed, if he's paid his back taxes. And in fact, he made a deal with the Democratic governor of New Hampshire to be replaced in the Senate. These things come up how often? By a Republican, at least for now. We'll talk about that when we get back. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I want to grow up to be a politician.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. And it's been a difficult week for President Obama. As mentioned earlier, three of his top nominees got caught with tax problems. Two pulled themselves out of contention yesterday. Every potential nominee goes through an intrusive vetting process. So what happened? Joining us now is Lanny Davis, a Washington lawyer and political analyst. He vetted many of President Clinton's appointees, including Bill Richardson, Zoe Baird, and Janet Reno. If you'd like to talk with him about the vetting process and about how it works or doesn't, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Lanny Davis is with us now by phone from Tel Aviv in Israel. Lanny, nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Hi. When's the last time you interviewed somebody from Tel Aviv, Israel?
I think about a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's other things going on, not in the political junkie segment, but we address other issues on this program, Lanny. But I did want to ask you, as you watched this from afar, what were your thoughts as these nominations imploded?
Well, I watched it up close with the Secretary of the Treasury and, of course, the sad story of Tom Daschle, who I greatly admire. And I understand a White House official also has been decided to withdraw, was in charge of the performance budget items, and all about tax issues. And I did have my own experience with both the Zoe Baird nomination by President Clinton when I headed up a vetting team, and one of the first issues that arose in my first conversation with Zoe, who is a good friend and who I felt very badly for. She immediately volunteered that she and her husband had not paid the Social Security taxes for their nanny, but that they had consulted with a labor attorney and had sent all the labor certification in to the Department of Labor and thought that the problem had been taken care of. But in the eyes of the U.S. senators who were looking at her nomination for Attorney General. That became a significant problem. Up to that point, it was very common, probably, for most people not to be aware of the obligation to pay nannies or even part-time contractors for their Social Security withholding. Now, since then, the veterans in all administrations have had the question, I understand, both in the Bush White Houses as well as the Obama transition, had questions on questionnaires about tax issues as well as any other embarrassing or potentially embarrassing issue, which is what veterans are supposed to worry about. So the art is not just asking the right question, but probing for things that maybe a particular person wouldn't think of as embarrassing to the future president or the current president. And by probing, you actually can stumble upon issues that might be problematical.
Well, in this case, it seems that the vetees and the vetters both knew about the issues and decided it wouldn't be a problem. And in this administration, it became a problem, a big one.
Well, somebody made a political judgment, certainly with Secretary Geithner, that we needed him so badly that his mistake in failing to pay taxes was worth overlooking, and the United States Senate didn't disagree, and they confirmed him. In the case of Senator Daschle, I guess the second strike probably landed more heavily than the first one. In the case of Senator Daschle, as a member of the United States Senate, he probably was feeling even more of a burden to the White House by staying in and creating the controversy that had already occurred. So these are really political perception issues. I don't think anybody is suggesting that Senator Daschle is corrupt or did anything intentionally illegal. But I think the perception of the public, especially at a time of great economic distress, is that you make a mistake and then you're asked to serve in the cabinet can cause a political controversy. It's a very subjective judgment. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it is a judgment that is part of the political reality of our times.
Ken?
Well, Lanny, I was going to ask you that question. In light of what happened to Zoe Baird and Kimba Wood, who was also perhaps a Clinton nominee for Attorney General, and Linda Chavez in the Bush administration, given those tax problems and the failure to pay taxes, why would Obama, especially given all the things that Obama said about transparency and a new way of doing things, why would he push for Geithner and Daschle? Is nobody else in the world that could fill those spots?
Well, look, I'm going to show my biases here and just disclose them right up front. I wrote a book, shamelessly promoted too, called Scandal, How Gotcha Politics is Destroying America. And I think there is a way of looking at this, and it is my way of looking at it. People might disagree, that without a showing of intention and corruption, but rather a showing of carelessness and mistake, there's a big difference between those two. That Barack Obama's new way of looking at things is that we're not going to play gotcha and catch people who make honest, even careless, even grossly careless mistakes if we think they're qualified and honest people and they're not perfect and they can make mistakes. Now, that's one way of viewing this, that this is not the gotcha politics, that you catch on to mistakes and you grab onto them and you politically exploit them and you blow them up. And you force somebody because of perceptions, not because of reality, just perceptions, to not be available for public service. And it's almost getting to the point where almost any flaw in the ointment at this point could disqualify someone because of the world in which perceptions sometimes appear to count more than reality. So I regret that this is happening. I think Tom Daschle would have done a great job. And I'm sorry that unless we know that he did something intentionally and unlawfully, which we do not know, I'm sorry that we've lost him. I think he would have been a great HHS secretary.
I was going to call her in on this. Dave calling us from Denver.
Hey, how's it going, Ira?
It's Neil, but go ahead.
Question on Bill Richardson that seems to be getting brushed aside, and that is he was vetted and subsequently withdrew prior to the inauguration. And my question is, one, what happens to these folks after these mistakes come to light, and two, no one seems to be talking about any pre-inauguration withdrawals.
We mentioned Bill Richardson before. Ken, he was caught up in an investigation back. He's, of course, governor of New Mexico, and there's an investigation into allegations of pay for play. But I don't think people expect that Bill Richardson's going to be indicted out of this. Ken?
Well, actually, I mean, nobody knows what's happened. I mean, he says he's not involved, he's not culpable, but of course there are people in his administration who may ultimately be indicted. It's a federal investigation, and that federal investigation was going on since last summer, so certainly the White House vetters knew about that when they appoint, you know, hoped that he would be Commerce Secretary.
Dave, thanks very much. You vetted Bill Richardson before, Lanny?
I did. He was up for Secretary of the Interior, and ultimately was not chosen by President Clinton, but not because of anything that I found in his background or in his vetting, but because Bruce Babbitt, who was former governor of Arizona, was picked as Secretary of the Interior. Secretary Richardson then became Secretary as first U.N. Ambassador and ultimately Energy Secretary. So there were really no vetting issues that I found. I know Bill Richardson for years. He's a man of great integrity. Unfortunately, he is caught up in an investigation. He is innocent until proven guilty. He hasn't even been charged with anything. And again, we're in an era where even the fact that you're involved in being investigated with no charge, with no indictment, and even an indictment, as we all know, ham sandwiches can be indicted by prosecutors that want to, shouldn't at least... In the presumption of guilt culture we're in, the word indictment seems to mean even guilt. So this is all maybe getting out of control, or maybe this is a time where perceptions are more important than reality, and we can't take the slightest chance to allow very qualified people, as I think Bill Richardson is, to serve if there's even a slight chance that he's going to be indicted. And then, of course, if he's ultimately acquitted, we'll all have said to ourselves, well, why couldn't he have served?
One could point out that Rod Blagojevich has not been indicted yet either.
Correct. And there's an example where a political and moral failure, there's no doubt that his words damn him for pay-for-play thinking. He may not be guilty of overt acts that could convict him, but his own words, to me, disqualify him from public service. He can't take back the words that he chose, and those words suggested, in fact, proved to me that he shouldn't stay on as governor. But that's a political judgment. That's not a legal judgment.
Lanny Davis, thanks for your time, and appreciate you taking time out while you're there in Tel Aviv to speak with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Lanny
Take
Davis, who is a Washington lawyer and political analyst with us on the line from Tel Aviv. Well, we're going to switch subjects now and go on to the political situation in New Hampshire. Just a reminder, we've had the Republican senator there, a very senior man in the Senate, Judd Gregg, who's now been named by President Obama to replace Bill Richardson as the next nominee to become Secretary of Commerce. And, well, there is apparently, this is what they had to say yesterday at the White House when President Obama announced Senator Gregg as his pick.
Now, clearly, Judd and I don't agree on every issue, most notably who should have won the election. But we do agree on the urgent need to get American businesses and families back on their feet.
And, of course, the appointment of Judd Gregg provides an opportunity for the Democratic governor of New Hampshire, John Lynch, to appoint a Democratic senator, which would tip the balance of power in the United States Senate and give the Democrats, conceivably, that 60-vote cloture-proof majority that they've been looking for. Instead, he named a moderate Republican to the seat, Bonnie Newman, amid many people's belief that a deal was made here. We want to hear from New Hampshire callers. What do you think of your new senator? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Joining us now by phone is Tom Rath, a Republican strategist and former New Hampshire Attorney General. Nice to have you with us on the program, Tom.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
And this seat didn't take too long to fill. Does it sound to you like there was an agreement here?
Well, it's close enough for government work. I mean, I think all the parties have been pretty open about the fact that there were discussions, and I think Senator Gregg made it clear that if his seat was going to be filled by someone who would tip the balance of power, he would decline the nomination. I think. Clearly, the White House was interested in having Senator Gregg do this, and I think in the grand scheme of things, it all played out well. The person the governor has chosen is person of great talent and extremely well known and well liked in New Hampshire. I think it's kind of a tribute to good politics that this all worked out like this.
She, though, as her part of the deal, has apparently promised not to run for election in her own right in 2 years' time.
Yeah, and I think that's because Bonnie Newman is a person who has a life and has other things in her life that she wanted to do than dedicate not just the time to being the senator, but the time to raising probably $8 to $10 million and having a 2-year political campaign. I think she said, I'll serve, I'll see that New Hampshire's interests are protected along with Senator Shaheen in the Senate, but the electoral part of it I'm going to skip and pass on. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable position and probably is a an endorsement of her judgment.
We're talking with Tom Rath about the political situation in New Hampshire, where a Senate appointment was made, no fuss, no muss, this week. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, Tom, you mentioned Senator Shaheen just elected last fall to be the next senator from the state of New Hampshire. If Judd Gregg had decided to run for re-election, he might be pretty tough on the Republican side. Nevertheless, doesn't this open this as a possible Democratic win in 2 years' time?
I think it would have been a tough election. I have absolutely every confidence that Judd Gregg would have been re-elected and re-elected in the end relatively easily. But clearly, this now presents an opportunity. It's an open seat. And an open seat in any state is a very different circumstance than when there's an incumbent, especially when you have an incumbent who's as ingrained and as part of the sort of the political landscape as Senator Gregg has been in New Hampshire. So, of course, it opens it up, but it also opens up an opportunity for a lot of people to get into the process. And nobody can predict what the environment's going to be in 2010. It could be very, very different than it is now, and We don't like our politics to be dull in New Hampshire, and they rarely are.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jessica. Jessica with us from Center Harbor in New Hampshire.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just going to call to say that I am happy with Bonnie Newman being picked. I think it makes sense to pick a Republican. I'm Democrat, but it makes sense for a Republican to be picked to kind of finish off the Republican term. And she was interim president when I graduated from UNH, and I know everybody hated the president before her, and so they were all really happy when she came in, and everyone was happy that she picked Clinton and George H.W. Bush to speak at our graduation, so that was very cool, but it also signaled that she is pretty bipartisan to get those two to speak at our graduation.
Yes, indeed, so bipartisan. I believe she endorsed the Democratic governor, Mr. Lynch. Tom Rath, do Republicans in New Hampshire consider her a real Republican?
I think she's a good Republican. She's got excellent Republican credentials, but I think she also understands that you have to work on both sides of the aisle. And I think her endorsement of Governor Lynch, who, by the way, was one of her students when she was the dean of students at UNH a long time ago, she admired him personally, and she isn't so hogbound that she can't ever say there's a good person running on the other side. I think that's great judgment. And she has, as evidenced by the bulk of comments up there today, a very large number of friends throughout the state in critical places who've watched her operate. And I think Governor Lynch, who has genuinely tried to govern from the middle, enjoys very high approval ratings from both Republicans and Democrats and independents. This is not inconsistent with the way he looks at the world.
Jessica, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
To Ken?
Tom, aside from the rumor that I've been spreading that the reason Judd Gregg left is because, as Herbert Hoover did, he went from Secretary of Commerce to the White House, and that's really what Judd Gregg wants to do. But seriously, why would Judd Gregg do this? Why would he endanger it? Why would he open up a Senate seat, given the fact that the Republicans are only about 41 seats right now and the Democrats are very close to the magic number of 60?
Well, Ken, first of all, it's good to talk to you. I think he... I don't think he looks at it quite in those stark political terms. I've talked a lot with Senator Gregg over the years. As you know, we're politically quite friendly, personally quite friendly. And he really does believe there's a time to campaign and there's a time to govern. And I think he believes this is a time to govern. And he has, going back well beyond, but certainly most notably from the time of the first bailout package, where he became front and center in crafting economic policy here, I think he believes his country is at a tipping point. This is at one of those critical moments in history when the momentary sort of vagaries of politics have to be cast aside, and people of goodwill and talent have to get together and try to get to a good place. And I think as he developed an ongoing relationship with the White House, and more particularly the president, as this opportunity presented itself, he said, this may be the moment when I have this call, and I've got to take it. This is the right thing to do. And I think the politics was secondary. They're kind of intriguing, and for those of us who probably wear the term junkie, it's great to chew over, but I also think there comes a time when service comes first.
Tom Rath, thanks very much for your time today. Have a good flight.
Good to talk to both of you. Thank you. Bye.
Republican strategist Tom Rath with us by phone. He was former chairman of Judd Gregg's and Warren Rudman's campaigns for Senate, and we thank him for his time today. Ken Rudin will be back with us next week. You can read his blog, The Political Junkie, at npr.org. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about Lost. This is NPR News.